My father loved the theater. My mother liked it too, but he really adored it. It quickly became my love as well. He took me to my first play in New York City when I was about 12, The Golden Fleece, starring Tom Poston, a cast member of The Steve Allen Show. We'd go to 8 or 10 plays a year together, and I became more and more fascinated by the theater. From the best to the worst, it didn't matter to me. We saw The Wayward Stork in the early 60s, a play about a mix-up in a sperm bank and the hijinks that ensued. I'll never forget it. It was one of the worst plays I have ever seen. No one was laughing except for one guy, dead center, front row. He was convulsed by every awful joke. I asked, "Who is that guy?" My father replied, as if on cue, "He's the playwright." During World War II, my father wasn't drafted because he worked for the Department of War as a designer of weapons, sea mines to be precise. They look like beach balls with stubs and are used to keep ships from entering the harbor. After the war and his subsequent marriage to my mother, my father tried desperately to get work designing in the private sector, but he had two strikes against him. First, he was Jewish, and anti-Semitism still prevailed among America's manufacturers. Second, most of the country's manufacturing had switched from consumer products to weapons, and my father wanted out of that line of business. Unable to find the kind of work he was looking for, my dad remained a government employee and continued to work on sea mines. As our country slowly began to drift further into the Vietnam War under Johnson, my mom began to work for the Women's Strike for Peace. My dad was not as quick to jump on the anti-war bandwagon as my mother. He picked up the Geneva Accords and actually read it, something I am pretty sure Johnson never did. This document was supposed to be the basis for our going to war, and my father read the whole thing to see if there was some rationale for our being in Southeast Asia. I tried to read it, but got through about 3 pages. It was like reading some sort of psychotic legal contract. When my dad finished going over it, he said there was nothing in it to justify our going to war. A few years later, we mined the North Vietnamese harbor at Haiphong. It deeply upset my father. He was always able to work on sea mines in good conscience, since it was a weapon whose purpose was supposed to be purely defensive. Now they had become offensive weapons in a war that had no real justification. My dad was 53 at the time. I was in college and my brother would be there in a year. He decided to retire at the age of 55, 10 years before he had planned to. It was truly an extraordinary event for a man with a family to give up his income in order to be able to live with his conscience. When your father drops out of the mainstream economy because of his principles and pursues a dream, it profoundly changes the way you look at the society in which you live. I didn't realize all the ramifications of his decision at the time, but it left a lasting impression on me and shaped the way I looked at work and what it meant. I was thrilled because my father was truly a role model for the 60s. He was hip. He was a dropout. And so he retired and began to study the art of stained glass as an apprentice. He created works of his own and then began to study art at the local junior college. He took art courses there for more than 20 years. He became an artist and painted into his mid-80s. When I asked him why he stopped, he said he had run out of ideas. My father called his work hard-edged abstractionism. Don't ask. But if you know the work of Mondrian, who basically painted squares of color, you'll have an idea of what his work looked like. By far, my father's finest work, as far as I'm concerned, was a more realistic piece called Showbiz. It's the only piece for which my father ever wrote a title. When I asked my father what he would really like to do, he said, "Sit on a bench in Paris, France, and watch the people walk by."